Underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester, Vermont, and Saratoga, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a master's degree in English with a concentration in literature studies and an MFA in creative writing. strose.edu/gradprograms.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. In his new book of investigative reporting, Lights Out, A Cyber Attack, A Nation Unprepared, Surviving the Aftermath, Ted Koppel reveals that a major cyber attack on America's power grid is not only possible, but likely, that it would be devastating, and that the United States is shockingly unprepared. It isn't just a scenario. Koppel says a well-designed attack on just one of the nation's three electric power grids could cripple much of our infrastructure, and in the age of cyber warfare, a laptop has become the only necessary weapon. Ted Koppel is a 42-year veteran of ABC News, was anchor and managing editor of Nightline from 1980 to 2005. He has won every significant television award, including 8 Peabodys and 42 Emmys. It is a great pleasure to welcome Ted Koppel to The Book Show. Thank you very much for being with us. What a great treat.
You offer a good cup of coffee, what more can a man want?
Give us a sense of when this issue came onto your radar and you realized it was something that you wanted to investigate.
It happens sort of sporadically, Joe, in the sense that there have been a number of leading administration officials, ranging from the then Secretary of Defense, Leon Panetta, who gave a speech here in New York in which he warned a bunch of defense executives that a cyber attack on the United States could produce what he called a cyber Pearl Harbor. Now, Pearl Harbor is one of those images that you only raise in extremists. Pearl Harbor has a not only an historic but a dramatic quality to it that certainly riveted my attention, and I couldn't wait to open the newspaper the next morning to see how much coverage this was going to get, and the answer was almost none. The New York Times had a small story on it. I think there might have been something in the Wall Street Journal, but by day two, nothing. I heard or watched similar reactions after Janet Napolitano left office, 5 years as Secretary of Homeland Defense, and she left office giving a farewell press conference in Washington, in which she too raised the specter of a cyber attack on our infrastructure and how devastating that would be. Look in the newspaper the next morning, nothing. Wasn't even a mention. So I began to look into it, and the more I looked into it, the more I discovered that, yes, there were an awful lot of responsible, respectable people in government who were warning about this, up to and including the president himself, who in not one but two State of the Union addresses made specific reference to the danger of cyber attacks and the fact that foreign powers were already trying to insinuate themselves into our infrastructure with cyber weapons. The more I looked into it, the more I realized that this was not something that was just in the offing. It was something that had already happened. I spoke to Keith Alexander, who was director of the National Security Agency, and it is his feeling that this has already happened, that the Chinese have succeeded in planting what would amount to sort of cyber landmines inside at least one of our power grids. We only have three in the United States. He put me on to a man who had been his chief scientist, a man by the name of George Cotter. I had several conversations and exchanges with Mr. Cotter. It is his belief not only that the Chinese and the Russians are in there, but that the Iranians and the North Koreans are very close to being in there, if they're not in already, and that we are probably at a stage where there are independent groups, perhaps a group like ISIS, that could get the capability simply by virtue of the fact that they have a great deal of money, could buy the expertise, and could essentially buy the equipment that they need off the shelf. So that's a very long-winded answer, but I think it's important that people understand I wasn't just making this up. I was sort of skeptical when I first looked into it. And the more I looked into it, the more confirmed this became in my own mind.
You mentioned Janet Napolitano, and she puts the likelihood of this happening at 80 or 90%.
Yes.
Which brings up the question which you raised at the very beginning, then why only the scant bit of attention and not more focus on this as a major issue, especially with that high of a probability?
Again, General Alexander, the former director of NSA, his theory is, the people who are running government are surrounded by alligators. And he said the tendency is to focus on the alligator that happens to be snapping at your ankles right now. You got the alligator called ISIS. You got the alligator called Syria. You got the alligator called Ukraine. You got the alligator. I mean, you've got a dozen different alligators that are snapping at your heels right now. And it becomes very, very difficult to get people in government who can barely keep their heads above water to focus on something that hasn't yet happened. We're terrific at reacting. Actually, when I say we're terrific, I'm not sure I actually believe that myself. We tend to overreact. Look only at what happened after 9/11. Two wars that are still in progress, the expenditure of $3 trillion, the establishment of the Department of Homeland Security, the establishment of the TSA. The TSA has 55,000 employees. They have spent over $100 billion over the past 13 years that they have been in existence. And yet when the Department of Homeland Security sent a team of investigators out to sort of test the TSA in airports around the country, they succeeded in smuggling phony weapons and explosive devices past the TSA 95% of the time.
Ted Koppel is our guest on the book show. The name of the book is Lights Out, A Cyber Attack, A Nation Unprepared, Surviving the Aftermath. You write in the book, any successful attack combines three features: opportunity, capability, and motive. You say that there is disagreement as to how much damage could be inflicted. And then you ask the question about motive. When it comes to motive, and this is going back to what you were mentioning earlier, it could be for a rash of reasons.
Sure.
What do you think the most likely scenario is?
Joe, I think we have to make clear in your audience's minds that there is a disconnect between the ability of certain parties to launch an attack like this and the likelihood that they will do it. And if you imagine a graph in front of you with two lines, one beginning at the bottom of the page on the left and going up, that's the capability graph. At the top of that line are the Russians and the Chinese. They not only have the capability, they are already in the grid. They have the capacity, more or less at a keystroke's effort, to take out all or part of one of our electric power grids, plunging tens of millions of people into figurative and real darkness, and perhaps keeping them there for a matter of weeks or months. On the other side of the page, you've got the likelihood. And the likelihood that the Chinese or the Russians would do that sort of goes from the top of the page down to the bottom right. They are less likely to do it because we have so many interlocking interests with the Chinese and the Russians. As you go down the scale of capability, China at the top, or Russia at the top, China number two, You come, let's say, to the third capable, that's Iran. The fourth capable, that would be North Korea. The fifth capable might be Syria, for example. The Syrians actually have been launching cyber attacks against the New York banking system for quite some time, which was something I didn't know before I began researching this book. They are less capable, but more likely. So as their capability rises, they become more of a threat. I'd be much more concerned about North Korea launching an attack like this than I would be about the Russians doing it. But fortunately, at the moment, the North Koreans probably are not as capable. But remember what North Korea did to Sony Pictures. And Sony Pictures, their internet structure was protected, I'm told, by 43 different firewalls. Didn't do them any good. One of those firewalls had not been kept up. And there is just a way in cyber warfare that people tend to find that most vulnerable point. And sometimes these companies that have extraordinary firewalls at work are still vulnerable to a worker taking his thumb drive home with him, plugging his thumb drive into a computer at home, which is not protected by a firewall, and then bringing that same thumb drive back to work the next day, and the system is infected.
You point out that using the term a weapon of mass destruction in this case is not off the mark.
It's not an exaggeration, because think only of what would happen. I mean, let's be very modest in our assumption. Let's assume only that New York City is hit and that 8 million people are affected. Within a matter of the first 3 or 4 days, you're going to have several dozen people, conservatively speaking, who are on life support of one kind or another, requiring electricity, not in a hospital. The hospital may have emergency, will have emergency generators, but in their apartment. And they're incapable of powering up those pieces of equipment. They're going to die. People are going to be stuck by the thousands in elevators in a place like New York City. The first thing that the cops and the firemen are going to have to do is rescue all those people in the elevators. And whereas people may be prepared to survive the first 2 or 3 days, in a city, a major urban center like New York, people don't have emergency generators. People don't have a month-long supply of food. People tend to have enough food for the next day or two. A lot of people in New York call out for food. The supply is gone in very short order. And remember now, the gas stations, which are going to supply the automobiles and the trucks, they're without electricity. Their pumps are not working, unless, of course, they have emergency generators. And in the case of Superstorm Sandy a couple of years back, we found that most of the gas stations around New Jersey and Connecticut and New York did not have those emergency generators and could not, therefore, pump the gas that they had. In a very short period of time, people are going to start dying. And the greater the scale of this attack, if an entire power grid were taken out so that you have several states hit, then the number of people who would die in the first couple of weeks would be in the thousands. That makes the internet, in this case, a weapon of mass destruction.
Ted Koppel is our guest on the book show this week. The name of the book is Lights Out. So let's talk for a few moments about why our power grid is so vulnerable. What have we done and what have we not done to put it in that precarious position?
Well, what we've done, one of the things we did is a number of years ago, we deregulated the electricity business so that whereas 15, 20 years ago, you had a handful of companies who generated power, transmitted power across great distances to local communities, and then downloaded that power into the customers' homes or places of business. With deregulation, you now have 3,200 different companies. The biggest of those companies are about as well protected as you can be in this age of the internet. There is no perfect protection. All you have to do is look at the daily stories of hacking into one business after another, one government agency after another, the embarrassment of the CIA director within the last few days, having his personal email hacked, the director of Homeland Security having the secretary having his email hacked. It goes on constantly. What happened in the power industry is that with deregulation, there is very little federal control of the power industry at all. You would think that the federal government has the power to impose regulations on what is, after all, one of the most critical, if not the most critical, infrastructure that we have, the electric power industry. The federal government has control only over the transmission from the point of generation to the point of delivery. There are federal regulations that apply. And even there, it's an arcane piece of business that took me forever to understand it. It's in the book. Read about it. I won't bore your audiences with it right now. But the bottom line is that even agencies like the CIA and the NSA, they have their own protections on their own turf. But when it comes to the electricity that is coming into the NSA from outside, there are no federal regulations governing how that electricity gets there and how well it has to be protected.
You do say in the book that there is plenty of blame to go around as to why we're in the position we're in. And I assume it does no good to look at that. We have to look at the situation that we have and figure out how to get out of it.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to be able to get out of it, Joe. I mean, I think the situation exists, and there is a sense of inevitability. I don't know when this conversation of ours is going to be broadcast, but in late October, the director of NSA, Admiral Mike Rogers, gave a speech in which he said it is inevitable that a cyber attack is going to be launched against our critical infrastructure. This is right now that he is saying that. And the fact of the matter is, talk to anyone who really knows anything about the internet, and they will concede the internet was never designed to be protected against attack. The people who designed the internet in the first place never imagined that it would be the target of attack. And it was never designed to be defended. And it is almost impossible to impose on something as complex as the internet, which was not designed to be defended, a really 100% successful defense. Therefore, what we ought to be doing, and I think it's important to say, Joe, this is not a partisan issue. This is not a liberal or conservative issue. It's not a Republican or Democratic issue. The federal government really ought at this point to be dealing with what the consequences of a major cyber attack on the power industry would be. If you ask yourself, is there, for example, enough food in federal warehouses to feed 10 or 20 or 30 million people over a period of a month or two, the answer is no, there is not. In fact, in New York State, while you have probably about 25 or 30 million MREs warehoused, meals ready to eat, if you do the math, forget about the rest of New York State, just Manhattan, 8 million people, 25 million MREs, one MRE per person per day. That's 3 days. What are you going to do on day four? There is no backup.
You talk about the plans that we have in place if the power goes out. And
I'm talking about the plans that we do not have.
That we do not have. But what I was fascinated by in the book is that the plans that we have in place are mostly for natural disasters.
Not mostly, almost entirely. If you go to the government website that lists what to do in the event of a disaster, you will find a list, I don't know, it's about 15 long.
Yes.
It has hurricanes, it has blizzards, it has storms, it has earthquakes, it has everything but death of the firstborn, right? The plague of locusts. I mean, it has everything except a cyber attack on our infrastructure.
It does have a terrorist attack, but not much like 9/11, but not...
Much like, exactly.
Right.
So there is nothing there that gives any guidance to the civilian population as to what they should do in the event of a disaster, the consequences of which last longer than 2 or 3 days. In all of their recommendations, the government talks about having enough food for at least 3 days, having enough water for at least 3 days, having a supply of your medicine for at least 3 days, having a radio with extra batteries and flashlights, having a meeting point for the family so that if the family is in different places, you know where you're going to go in the event of that disaster. All of those things make perfectly good sense. Few, if any of them, have any relevance to a cyber attack on the power grid. When it comes to a plan for a lengthy outage over an extended geographic area, there is no plan.
So I ask you, Ted Koppel, newsman who is trusted by so many, are we screwed?
Well, that's elegantly put, Joe. We're screwed unless we start to act to a certain extent, in our own behalf. And let me begin by saying that I realize what I'm going to propose here cannot apply to millions of people out there. I'm going to suggest that people begin to acquire a backlog of survivable food that could last them for a month, 2 months, 3 months. Members of the Mormon Church who are privy to what it is like to be pushed from pillar to post around this country. I mean, the history of the Mormon Church in America is a history of having been driven out of one home after another. The Mormons are very good about preparing for disaster. They have done a brilliant job. There are things that the rest of us can learn from them. The idea that you gradually, over a period of months, every time you go shopping, buy a little bit extra that you can put into a closet, or I don't care if you live in an apartment. I've seen some of these 3 month supplies that Mormon families have, and you'd be surprised how little space it takes up. But to have enough food, not for 2 or 3 days, but for 2 or 3 months, gives you a degree of flexibility to assume at least that by 2 or 3 months, government or the military will somehow have begun to deal with the problem and that there's a chance of surviving it. Those who cannot afford, and as I say, I realize there are millions of people who have trouble putting food on the table on a day-by-day basis. The government has to have warehouses full of freeze-dried food. Freeze-dried food will last up to 25 years. No matter what the disaster, whether it's a flood, whether it's a hurricane, whether it's a blizzard, or whether it's an attack, a cyber attack on the power grid, that food will be equally usable. We are brilliant, as Tom Ridge, the first Secretary of Homeland Security, told me, we are brilliant at responding, reacting to disaster. We are terrible at preemptive measures. We are terrible at anticipating. If you just look at what we did in the wake of 9/11, we are great at responding after the fact. We over-respond. But if I were to say to you, we need to spend $100 billion on freeze-dried food to be kept in government warehouses in the event that something like this were to happen, Congress would say, $100 billion? Are you out of your mind? We can't spend $100 billion. We have to. We have to.
Ted Koppel's new book is Lights Out, A Cyber Attack, A Nation Unprepared, Surviving the Aftermath. Ted Koppel, I thank you very much for being with us and sharing with us this morning. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you, Joe. I enjoyed it.
Thank you. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org, and you can listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org. Sarah LaDuke produces our program. Special thanks to Paul Ruest and Argo Studios. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.